were just waiting for a few people to arrive from the NCOP, and let me heartily welcome honorable members from the National Council of Provinces, the Department of Transport, which is very depleted today because the acting DG and some senior staff are in a strategic plan. Honorable members of the National Assembly, parliamentary staff, you're all welcomed. It's been a hectic almost 3 weeks that we are busy dealing with the bills that are in front of the portfolio committee. We've seen the public hearings that was there as we're dealing with ARTO. But I must also say outright to the National Council of Provinces that this is one of the most difficult bills ARTO that one has been able to engage around. Probably when it arrives or eventually we take a decision that we should proceed up until it reaches the NCOP, you will really realize that the penal beating that has happened is massive. And we hope that it will get a nod from the National Assembly. We are here today to be workshopped on the National Land Transport Act Amendment Bill, which actually we are of the opinion that this is another piece of legislation which is very important. Important in the sense that we are moving South Africa forward, and we believe that when you deal with issues that are transport related, you're not only focusing on the economic aspect, you're also focusing on the environment, the climate change that is there, you're also focusing on the socio-economic aspects of the bill as to what will be the impact as we're dealing with this. And we're looking forward to say the public hearings that will be coming, and obviously with the NCOP going to a variety of provinces, will in the end be able to take the Department of Transport forward. And in the end, it will be able to assist the functionaries in government to be able to work. On that note, having welcomed everybody, let me, without hesitation, invite the department to introduce themselves. The team leader will introduce your team so that for the benefit of the members, they should be able to know who is here. I'm Honorable Magadzi, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly. My colleague in the NCOP is still held up in a meeting. Honorable, let me just quickly request all the honorable members to quickly introduce that team with yourself here, honorable, and then it goes like that. And then we'll take it to the department for them to introduce themselves for us to be able to know who are we talking there to and for them to know us. Because sometimes we take it for granted that functionaries knows us. Little do we realize that they don't even know how important you are as honorable members. They don't even know you. And I know because when you've got learners and students who don't know their leadership, it becomes even problematic when it goes higher, because the more you grow old, the more some of the things fall by the wayside. Honorable member, it's your turn.
Thank you, Chair. I greet everybody with Assalamu Alaikum. I'm Yunus Vauda, member of the NCOP from the province of Mpumalanga, and I'm a fighter.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members and officials from the department. My name is Mandla Isaac Khai. I've just been redeployed to the committee of the Select Committee on Business and Economic Development. before I could even attend such a meeting, I'm attending now this joint one for the first time.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Pat Sibande. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee of Transport. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Mr. Khadebe, a member of the Portfolio Committee. From Mpumalanga, but I'm not a fighter. I'm an ANC.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Omakatan, a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Joe Masorai from Limpopo. I'm a member of this committee from the ANC.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Chris Hunsinger from the Western Cape, member of this portfolio committee. Peace loving.
Thank you very much. Those are the honorable members who are here. As they come in, probably we may introduce some of the members. As they will be coming in, let me give it to the leader of the delegation from the Department of Transport in the Republic of South Africa.
Good morning. I'm Hemant Patel. I'm the chief director responsible for public transport regulation.
Morning. I'm Neville Tingle, advisor to the department.
Morning. Takanda Andrin from Department of Transport, deputy director responsible for public transport policy and legislation.
Morning. Moses Milani from the Department of Transport, director responsible for policy and planning.
Morning, colleagues. Lindy Wetwala from the Department of Transport, also responsible for policy and legislation.
Good morning. My name is Solomon Kuyane from Legal Services Legislation.
Good morning. My name is Mulongo Mashaka from Legal Services Legislation.
Don't be afraid of the technology.
Mpumalulega from the Parliamentary Liaison.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. My name is Bwimotlo Ntshebe. I'm part of the select committee responsible for the department. Thank you so much.
Just on time before we could start the presentation, honorable member, you're welcome together with your team, the select committee on transport and other matters, I would say, because it's a long one, I know. So. Yeah, that's why I'm saying select committee on transport and other matters. Let me give it to you, sir, so that we can start with the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. This presentation over here is in relation to the National Land Transport Amendment Bill of 2016. The contents of the presentation are as follows. Background, the main reasons for the amendment bill, definitions, functions of the minister, regulations by minister, functions of MEC, regulations by MEC, accessible transport and non-motorized transport, responsibilities of spheres of government, impartiality, intermodal planning committees, municipal regulatory entities, the National Public Transport Regulator, the provincial regulatory entities, the Municipal Land Transport Fund, the Provincial Land Transport Framework and Integrated Transport Plan, rationalization of public transport services, negotiated contracts and stopgap contracts, subsidized and commercial contracts and old order contracts, rationalization of services, operating licenses, metered taxis, charter and staff services, operating licenses in general and cross-border transport, tourist transport, general amendments, and amendments of other acts. And the final stages we deal with the consultations that were undertaken, the key issues in the bill, and the challenges moving forward, financial implications, and parliamentary procedure. One, the background, the National Land Transport Act of Act 5 of 2009 was passed to further the process of transforming and restructuring the national land transport system that was started by the previous transition act. It was called the National Land Transport Transition Act of 2000. The amendment bill provides for development since 2009, such as rolling out of the 2007 public transport strategy, which was approved by cabinet. The Act has met with much success in achieving its objectives, example, consolidating transport functions at the local sphere. There are also some technical issues that have required amendments of the legislation. Provision is made for non-motorized transport and accessible transport in line with international best practice. I need to indicate that this is a new element within the legislation. Some of the contracting arrangements for public transport services are revised. The functions of the spheres of government are clarified. The administrative arrangements for operating licenses are streamlined. Provision is made for electronic hailing of taxis such as Uber, Zephyr Cab, Zebra Cab, and such. The minister is empowered to delay the implementation of the act while contracting arrangements are put in place. Consequential amendments are made and errors have been corrected. So, clause 1A, section 1 of the Act, the new definition of association. This was needed because the regulatory entities, the provincial regulatory entities and the national public transport regulator are required to keep information on association. So when an operator applies, you need to link the operator to that association as well. Section 1, the definition of contracting authority is amended, so there are new contracting arrangements included, and we will address it a little bit later. Definitions of integrated public transport network has been amended. Non-motorized transport has been included and clarifies the distinctions between integrated rapid public transport network and integrated public transport network. Definition of meter taxi services has been amended, which provides for electronic hailing. New definition of municipal regulatory entity. This is merely to make the legislation easier. New definition of non-motorized transport. The definition of rail commuter corporation has updated to FRASA. Consequential amendments to definitions and new definition of targeted categories of passengers. Previously it was called special categories, that's what the legislation had, but people who are differently able are of the view that that would be an incorrect way to state them, their situation, and they should be called targeted categories of passengers. For the functions of the minister, that is section 54K of the legislation, the minister must promote measures to ensure safety. This is chairperson is in relation to safety of passengers and pedestrians, and the cabinet has also asked the minister to develop an overall safety strategy as well. Five regulations by the minister, section 81G of the legislation. The minister's power to make regulations on the process of offering alternate services to operators have been expanded. Experience has shown that there is a need for these type of regulations. The power to make regulations to set fees have been included. The power to publish codes of conduct for operators and drivers have been included as well. The minister's power to make regulations on color coding and branding of vehicles limited to where national uniformity is required. And the MECs are also empowered to do the same within their respective provinces as well. The minister can make regulations on meetings of regulatory entities. The minister can make regulations on requirements and time frames for vehicles to accommodate targeted categories of passengers, vehicles as well as infrastructure. Six, the functions of the MEC, that's section 9.2d of the legislation. The annual reports by MECs must include prescribed information. Here we've included this clause over here because we are of the view that it would make sense for the MECs to provide a report to the Minister of Transport on a regular basis, particularly in terms of what is the state of public transport in the province, what is the state of dispensing of operating licenses, and similar type of information will need to be forthcoming to the Minister on an annual basis. Seven, regulations by MECs. That is section 10.1.3.A. The MEC may make regulations on color coding and branding of vehicles subject to regulations made by the Minister at the national level. Eight, accessible transport and NMT. Chairperson, this is a new element within the Act that has been introduced, the notion of accessible transport. And we've included it together with the non-motorized transport. But Chairperson, we've also given it a broad definition, so it's not only accessible transport only for the people who are differently able, but it's also for people who are able in terms of spatial access to public transport. Nine is the responsibilities of spheres of government. That's section 11.1. The powers included for national government to enter into new contracts for public transport services. Presently, the Act only provides for national DOT to have powers over old order contracts. This is now the powers to enter into new order contracts have now been included as powers for the national department as well. Section 11.1b. Powers are included for provinces to conclude new contracts in municipal areas where the municipality does not comply with the prescribed requirements and criteria. Here I need to indicate that this is one of the, this whole of section 11 is one of the key amendments of this bill. And basically, herein, and maybe I need to spend a bit of time on this space over here to explain. So the overall framework that we have arrived at in terms of the whole setting is that, if you recall, the old order contracts are resting with the provinces, and they would need to, and when they come to an end, they will need to enter into new order contracts. So the old order contracts were in terms of the Transition Act, and the new order contracts are in terms of the NLCA. So the framework that we've developed over here, and this was through, when we were in cabinet, the Minister of FOCTA, Minister of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs, requested that we have further consultations and discussions with FOCTA, which we had, and based on those consultations with FOCTA, the framework we've now developed is to say that so rather than those 13 municipalities where the IPT ends are being rolled out, we don't mention them now in the bill, but what we said is that when an old order contract comes to an end, there will be certain criteria and requirements that will be developed between the department of the Minister of Transport and the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. So based on those joint criteria between the Minister of Transport and the Minister of Doctor, but that criteria will then determine whether when an old order contract comes to an end, who should enter into the new order contract. Should it be the province? Should it be the municipality in that instance? So if the municipality qualifies in terms of the identified criteria, then the municipality will undertake the new order contract. However, if the municipality does not meet those and does not even meet those contracts, then the province will continue doing so. Where the province fails to implement its function in terms of a new order contract, national then takes over. So that's broadly the framework, because reading through all of these sections over here, it can be quite confusing. So that's broadly that. Section 11.1c, municipalities must do financial planning for land transport in consultations with the state rail operators. This is because what Trasa was saying, that quite often what happens is that municipalities, they develop their plan, the IDP, they include passenger rail issues with certain financial implications, and they are not, they only get to know about it later, and hence what we are saying that they require consultations between them before they allocate the responsibility to Trasa. And then section 11.1c are consequential amendments and corrections. The responsibility of the spheres of government continues, section 11.1c. Powers of municipalities to contract will only apply to municipalities that meet the prescribed requirements and criteria as explained earlier. Only the operating license functions can now be assigned to the municipality in terms of these provisions now. The process of dealing with all order contracts between the provinces and municipalities is clarified. That is the contract in terms of the Transition Act, where a province contracts the services must be in line with the integrated transport plan of the municipality or designed in collaboration with the municipality. So where the province undertakes the contracting function, this is the process that they will need to follow. The ministry is also empowered to make regulations and requirements and criteria to be met by municipalities when contracting. So some of the key criteria that are this one is in legislation already, but the rest of the criteria will be located in regulations once the Minister of Transport and Minister of Costa has developed those. So it's like the kind of criteria an acceptable ITP in your right hand corner, that the municipality has the requisite capacity and financial resources, that the services in the area justify the contract. So the public transport services, what is the scope and scale of public transport in that particular area? If it is significant, obviously, then it would make sense for that municipality to qualify. 10, impartiality, that's section 13.1f. Members of the South African Police Services, traffic officers, and Metro Police are included in the list of persons who may not have a financial or business interest in the public transport industry. Intermodal planning committees. Intermodal planning committees chairperson for those municipalities that are either planning or rolling out IPTNs and VRP type of systems. So the IPC must be established by a date to be prescribed by the minister. And IPCs will only consist of officials. Because it is a planning committee, our view is that it does not make sense to have stakeholders located in there. Once the plan is developed by the municipality, then they can then take it through to, for example, the Land Transport Advisory Board that is also in legislation at the moment, and then engage with them in a structured manner on those plans, the ITPs. And furthermore, the Intermodal Planning Committee must also facilitate a service level agreement with Prasa where it is appropriate. So where there are rail services and there are large municipalities, like for example the city of Johannesburg, Kuleni, Ikitwini, Cape Town, they can enter into a service level agreement with Prasa. We know that the passenger rail services are actually, implemented at the local level. However, the municipalities have very little say in terms of how often they are of the view the trains should run during peak hours, for instance, what should be the situation off peak, the cleanliness and other types of service levels offerings. 12, municipal regulatory entities. This is in relation to section 17 and 18 of the Act. Consequential amendments and clarifies that MREs will be responsible for services only within the municipal area. MREs are required to keep information on operators and association and their members. So only when you set up a municipal regulatory entity, in which case you can only address those operating licenses that are within your own jurisdiction. Anything outside of that has to go to the province, to the provincial regulatory entity. The National Public Transport Regulator, Section 20 of the Act. More detail is provided on appointment and administrative arrangements for the NPTR. This was based on consultations and comments that we have received from National Treasury. And what they indicated is that we should appoint them as non-executive directors. Section 21, new duties for the NPTR are introduced to deal with passenger complaints, advise the minister on treatment of passengers. The NPTR must also keep information on operator association and members, like any other regulatory entity. And furthermore, the NPTR may issue directives to PREs and MREs where they are not performing their function. One of the functions of the NPTR is to oversee public transport in the country, as well as to oversee all the provincial regulatory entities, all regulatory entities, in which instance this is the additional power that we are giving to the NPTR. 14 provincial regulatory entities, section 23. More detail is provided on appointment and administrative arrangements for PREs. It's similar to the NPTR situation, and I don't think we need to go through this. The section 24 requires PREs to keep information on operators, the association, the members, and the routes in the case of minibus taxi type services. 15, municipal land transport funds, provincial land transport frameworks, and integrated transport plans. Section 27, a consequential amendment. Section 35, the requirement to update provincial land transport frameworks every 2 years has been removed because it was felt to be too onerous, and therefore it will be now only updated every 5 years. 36, section 36.4c. The MEC must also monitor other organs of state to see that they follow the correct procedures in relation to ITPs. So for example, organs of state such as Central, FASA, and such that are operating or in various provinces, they need to be monitored in terms of what kind of project that they are rolling out as well. Rationalization of public transport services. 39, section 39, when a planning authority is rationalizing public transport services, it must consult affected operators and relevant regulatory entities and apply law enforcement measures before doing so. Herein, what we are saying, Chair, is that when a municipality seeks to rationalize, if they feel that on a particular route, there's overtrading, there's excessive number of operators and services relative to the demand, in which case they can rationalize the service on that route. But before they do that, What they first need to do is apply law enforcement measures and firstly remove illegal operators. Then you need to, after that has been done, then you can assess whether there is still excess or not. If there is still excess of operators, you can offer them an alternative route, or you can say that you can remain on this route but introduce a moratorium from preventing any new applications to be allowed on that particular route. 17, negotiated contracts and stopgap contracts. That is section 41 of the Act. Clarifies the meaning of once-off in relation to negotiated contracts. Procedural provisions currently in the contracting regulations are moved into the Act. So what is currently in the regulations? And this was the state law advised us that rather than having it in the regulations, we should actually bring it from the regulation and locate it within legislation. Section 41A, it empowers the contracting authorities to conclude stopgap contracts for not more than 3 years. This is a new element as well that we are introducing into the legislation here. What happens is that when a municipality is introducing the IPTN, the BRT type system within its jurisdiction, it takes them at least about 2 to 3 years to negotiate with the relevant operators on those routes or routes. And during that time, you don't want a situation where there isn't a continuity of services. You need to ensure that on the one hand, and therefore we're saying that you can enter into a stopgap contract. It's an interim measure until such time you have concluded the 12-year negotiated contract with the relevant operator. 18, subsidized and commercial contracts and gold order contracts, section 42. Subsidized contracts are made subject to the Municipal Systems Act. It says that a contracting authority does not have to go out on tender if negotiating with a municipal entity or another municipality. The provisions empowering the minister to publish model tender and contract documents are now streamlined. Hearing what we are saying is where a municipality has a municipal-owned entity, like such as Johannesburg Metrobus, in which case they can enter into a contract directly with Metrobus through in terms of the Municipal Systems Act. So they don't necessarily have to go out on tender. Section 43 of the Act. The commercial contracts are also made subject to the Municipal Systems Act and Section 45, the section imposing limitations on the involvement of municipalities in public transport services is repealed. This was a section that we are of the escape from the old Transition Act, and we believe that it's redundant. 46, consequential amendments. 19 is rationalization of services. Section 47 will extend the deadline for converting permits to operating licenses for 5 years. And this is in a later slide as well, where we indicate that this is a challenge that we are facing as we move forward. Because what has happened is, in terms of the NLPA, all permits that have not been converted to operating licenses, indefinite permits and such, if they have not been converted, then by December 2016, they will lapse. And this is the situation, I think, that we will need to have discussions here within the committee members. Section 48.2 provides for the conversion of permits for scheduled services to commercial service contracts. 49, the taxi recap provision amended to clarify them. The requirement that a new vehicle may not have a capacity of more than 20% larger than the old vehicle has been removed. So when an operator wants to replace the vehicle but wants to move on to a higher number of seats, the legislation provides that you could not move up you could not have, you can't move up more than 20% from where you are at this point in time. So if you have this, for example, a 16, 17 seater minibus taxi, you couldn't do more than 20%. And most of the operators in our discussion with them indicated that they would, and the 20% would have limited them to 19 seats. So in our discussions with them, what they indicated that they would, they prefer to have 22 seaters. And so hence this provision over here, we're removing that 20%. 51, section 51, consequential amendments. Section 53, provisions on the exemptions are clarified. Staff services will be exempt where the employer owns the vehicle and does not charge a fare. That means they will be exempt from operating licenses. Section 54 clarifies where applications must be made to MREs. 56, operating licenses must be issued automatically where a stopgap contract is awarded. At the moment, the legislation provides where a contract has been awarded, a normal contract, in which case operating licenses are over the counter, and we are saying for stopgap contracts would be the same. Section 57, regulatory entities must also consider contraventions of the codes of conduct when evaluating applications for operating licenses. So this, the bill introduces the notion of codes of conduct for drivers and operators, and it will be in the form of regulations, and in future, the provincial regulatory entities and others will have to consider the code of conduct when actually assessing the application of an operator. 20, operating licenses continued, section 59. Applications for operating licenses do not need to be published in certain cases. For example, when you apply for a temporary operating license or when you're applying for replacement of vehicles, in those type of situations, there's no need for you to publish that. Section 62, requirements to submit proof of insurance deleted due to amendments of the Road Accident Fund Act. So the public liability cover issue was removed in terms of the Road Accident Fund Amendment Act of 2008, and hence we are removing it here as well. Section 64 clarifies that an operating license can be issued to an accredited tour transport operator even if he or she is not the owner of the vehicle, in the case where they are allowed to rent to each other once an operator has been accredited. Section 21, metered taxis. This is one of the issues that I think we are all aware has been in the newspapers for a while. It's section 66. The minister on the provision on standards for metered taxis is deleted as it is covered by Legal Meteorology Act and other legislation. The section is also amended to regulate e-hailing services. Now, the e-hailing services are your Uber type of services, ZebraCab, ZebraCab. There are chairperson there, about 6 to 7 e-hailing electronic type of services already operating in the country. It's just that everybody only knows about Uber because it's probably the largest operator. So herein is saying that the minister may make regulations setting standards and requirements for e-hailing, electronic hailing type of services. The regulations may include that a meter is required as well as an e-hailing application. So in our discussions with the Metered Taxi Association, what they indicated is they are opposed to the electronic hailing Uber type of services. But through discussions, they came forward with the view that what we can do is that we allow for an operator to be a meter taxi operator, but at the same time can be an Uber operator. So when the meter taxi is part of the service, they're not getting any customers at that point in time, but is able to get an Uber customer, they will be allowed to do so. And then the minister may make regulations on requirements for meters. Charter and staff services, section 67, limitations are imposed on charter services for operating license or charter services. The applicant must show a need for the service and that it will be provided on a regular basis. the provincial regulatory entities indicated to us in our consultation with them is that quite often what is happening is that some of the operators, instead of applying for the normal public transport taxi type of service, quite aware they may not get it because maybe the routes are oversupplied and all of that. In which case, what they do is that they then apply for a charter type of services and then continue running a normal, you know, commuter type service. Section 68 clarifies that an operating license is not required for staff services where no fare is charged, and that where staff services are contracted to an operator, in which case he or she would be required to have an operating license. Operating license in general and cross-border transport. Section 73, the size of vehicles for purpose of replacement of vehicles, it has been clarified. Section 74.1A allows a vehicle to be replaced temporarily where the existing vehicle is sold, stolen or destroyed because the respondent operators. Section 75.3, the presumption that where passengers are loaded within 2 kilometers of a border, the operator is undertaking cross-border transport is now being removed. This is actually a provision that belongs to the Cross-Border Road Transport Act, and we've had discussions with the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency, and they agreed that this is a matter that they will need to take it for themselves rather than being in the NLCA. Section 79, the criteria for withdrawing operating licenses have been amended to include contravention of legislation and contravention of code of conduct that will come into being once this will, if it gets passed. Section 24, tourist transport, section 81, applications for accreditation of tourist transport operators must be published for comment. An omission in the Principal Act. Section 84 is the provision that accredited tourist operators may use any suitable vehicle. Are clarified. This includes rented vehicles that are suitable. An operating license must be issued for the vehicle over the counter. NPTR may impose conditions when doing so. In the case of tourist transport services, what we think is that if the tourist operator has been accredited. So the accreditation form of regulation is something that we introduced in the NLTA for tourist transport services, and that form of regulation came about through it was a previous portfolio committee that instructed the department to say, you know, the department really needs to look at tourist transport services, and they need to formulate a proper framing of how that it should be dealt with. And so therefore we had the consultative process, Department of Transport, Department of Tourism, Department of Trade and Industry, and the tourist transport operators. Based on that, we had developed a position paper. And the principles that were enunciated in that position paper were then included in the NLTA, and therefore now tourism is regarded as one of the important drivers within the economy as well, and therefore now the tourist transport services application for accreditation has to come to the National Public Transport Regulator. So it is a body that was created in the NLTA specifically for these type of services. And accreditation is a more intrusive form of regulation, Chair. It's unlike your normal operating license type of regulation, wherein when an operator applies for accreditation, we are then required to send a team to go and check the facilities of that operator. We have to see whether they have a proper service record, maintenance record, other mechanics qualified, it's all those kind of things that will be done in terms, that's being done already in terms of the accreditation process. And 86, section 86, are consequential amendments. And 25, general amendments. Section 92 clarifies and broadens who may appeal to the Transport Appeal Tribunal, and it makes a distinction between appeals that are under the Municipal Systems Act. Section 93, the provision that existing transport authorities must be adopted into the municipality administration after the date determined by the minister for the demise of the relevant authority is amended. As the chair, there is only one transport authority, the Intervening Transport Authority, at this point in time. It was supposed to have been instead of being a standalone entity, it was supposed to have been brought into the municipality's administration directly. Section 93A, to avoid legal challenges, the minister may delay the implementation of the Act or certain sections of the Act or exempt the NPTR provinces, municipalities, PREs or MREs from implementing provisions of the Act for set time frames where practicalities or lack of capacity is prevented. This is was brought to our attention by the Auditor General. What the Auditor General said to the department is that your legislation requires all your, you know, all these old order contracts, and many of them are on a month-to-month contract basis. And they said that it's actually contrary to your legislation. So we said maybe we need to introduce this measure over here until that problem is being sorted out. The 26 amendments of other legislation, 93B, clarified Section 84.1B of the Municipal Structures Act as regards public transport functions between district and local municipalities. At the moment, in terms of the Municipal Structures Act, the district municipalities are allowed to regulate public transport. We are saying it should be subject to the NLTA. Amend Section 23 of the Legal Succession Act to the Southeastern Transport Services Act of 89 to provide that PRASA must deliver rail commuter services at the request of a municipality in terms of service level agreement and subject to budget availability. So at the moment, that Act merely provides for that only national can request PRASA. Now we're saying that the municipality will also be able to do so. The other part repeals the section of the Road Transportation Act of 1977 that are redundant and were not repealed when the Act was assigned to the provinces. So it's this part of the cleanup of the legislation. 27 is the consultation. We had engagements with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, the National Taxi Alliance, the South African Local Government Association, the National Consumer Commission, the Department of Trade and Industry, the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, the Cross Border Road Transport Agency, the South African National Taxi Council, the National Treasury, municipalities, the Department of Tourism, the South African Network of Women in Transport, the South African Bus Operators Association, the Road Traffic Management Corporation, the Committee of Transport Officials, the National Economic Development Labour Council, the State Law Advisors, the Itekweni Metropolitan Municipality, the Itekweni Transport Authority, the City of Johannesburg Metropolitan Municipality, the City of Cape Town Metropolitan Municipality, the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Transport, the Mpumalanga Department of Public Works, Roads and Transport, the Limpopo Operating Licensing Board, the Limpopo Department of Roads and Transport, the Gauteng Department of Roads and Transport, the Gauteng Meter Taxi Association, the Eastern Cape Department of Transport, the Free State Department of Police, Roads and Transport, the Western Cape Provincial Regulatory Entity, the Western Cape Department of Transport and Public Works, the Western Cape Meter Taxi Association, the Northwest Department of Public Works and Roads, the Northern Cape Department of Roads and Public Works, the South African Tourism Services Association, Uber, and the Special Economic Sectors Employment Infrastructure Cluster, the ISIS Cluster. Some of the key challenges or issues are the key issues in this well are the contracting arrangements for public transport services are revised as explained earlier. Provision is made for electronic hailing. The minister is empowered to delay the implementation of the legislation in or certain parts of the legislation, and IPTNs and shopgap contracts have been introduced. The key challenges are the following. One is the conversion of permits to operating licenses, which I indicated earlier. It is a matter that the committee also needs to have discussion on. And the other one is the proposal for a transport authority for by Gauteng government. But this is a substantive matter, Chair. Unfortunately, as a department, we are not opposed to transport authority. We don't have a problem with it at all. Unfortunately, it was submitted to us after the cabinet process, after the statewide advisor had already certified the bill. So we weren't able to deal with it in the amendment bill. But being a substantive matter, it will mean, if we want to take it forward, it will mean that the department will have to go back to the to cabinet again. It will mean we'll have to also start again with the process of consultation with the relevant stakeholders like SALGA, the municipalities, COGTA and others. And that would be quite a process altogether. The financial implications, the bill proposes clarification on roles and powers as well as extension on definitions, and is therefore not expected to have any additional financial implications that were not envisaged by the Principal Act. Parliamentary process, the department is of the opinion that the bill must be dealt with in accordance with the procedure established by Section 76 of the Constitution, that it deals with public transport and envisaged in Schedule 4 to the Constitution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Those who arrived while the presenter was in session, I'm going to request you to introduce yourself because all of us have had an opportunity of knowing who's here, but also welcoming members from the National Council of Provinces. I will start right here in front, honourable member, if you can introduce yourself. And at the back, those who arrived while the process was going on, just introduce yourself for members and the functionaries to know who's in here. Honourable member.
Good morning, Chair. My apologies for being late. We're coming from another meeting. My name is Mpue George Mtimunye. I am a whip of the Senate Committee on Business and Economic Development, which includes transport in the SOP.
The red overall.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, Chairperson. I'm Chidiwai Mraudi. I'm a member of Portfolio Committee of Transport. And my apology to arrive late.
Honourable
De Freitas. Mr. Chair, my apologies, my flight landed later. My name is Manny De Freitas, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Willem Schwabe. I represent the NCOP on transport for the Northern Cape province.
Thank you very much. I see
a half of you around the pillar. My name is Jacques Miller, I'm a member of the NCOP.
Can't you come and sit, honourable member, here where you'll be very visible? This pillar is obscuring you. Are you comfortable where you are?
I'm comfortable.
Okay, it's fine. You guys are in a caucus mode, I can see. Anyway, it's fine. Let's proceed. Honourable members, the presentation has made before us. Let us engage with the presentation. Probably if there are questions that seeks clarity or any other, we're just going to be discussing and working towards understanding what exactly are the issues here. Interchangeably, I will be requesting my colleague here to co-chair with me here, so that at least you don't necessarily speak because you hear just one voice. Today it will be the baritone and the alto kind of voice, so that's a good one. Honorable members, let me recognize yourself, honorable, and let's start here, and then it goes.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to start with the last part of the presentation. The presenter makes reference to the fact that Gauteng would have made a submission with regard to establishment of their own transport authority as a province. And he further makes an indication that that submission would have been made after fact in terms of submissions to the cabinet and all other processes that would have unfolded in the processing of this particular bill. But he doesn't explain to us. He further says he doesn't explain to us as to whether is the department prepared to go and start afresh the process to accommodate the submission by Gauteng. If the department does have a problem with regard to that, and what is the problem of the department? My second question is the issue of the permits, the validity period. I didn't get it. Say, what is the validity period of an operation permit?
Thank you, Chairman. I think my point also is the one that he raised about Gauteng submission. Given that this is a Section 76 bill, that members of the NCOP, when they go to the provinces, Gauteng might raise this as a point. So how then the NCOP should be dealing with the issue? Because if it's convincing to the NCOP members who will be visiting the provinces, they may vote and agree on it. And it means therefore it must go back to the NA if the NA has not considered it. That's one part. So I also need clarity on that. The other point is on, I think, page 13 on the responsibilities of spheres of government. The section 11.1b, 7a, the powers that are included for provinces to come. I understand that you think that there's still a discussion with the Minister of Court. But also I was just looking at the section 139 of the Constitution. Maybe Parliament Legal Services can also come in on this one. Whether this does, is it still in line with the section 139 of the Constitution with regard to the inability of the municipality to execute its executive responsibilities. That's another point then on this metered. Maybe the chairperson, when she was opening, she was saying that this act does not only deal with the transport or land, but also environment. But my point, I think it should also deal with the working conditions as well. You find that, especially the meter driver, they will, as they ferry passengers, maybe the last load will be, say, midnight. But again, at 5 in the morning, they must be up to ferry passengers to places like airports. I wanted to check whether the act, I don't know if it's your responsibility, whether it takes into account the safety of the driver, but also the passenger, because you may not know that this person has slept late if they take you to airport the previous night. And so even your safety is at risk. So I wanted to check if that has been addressed. But I see that NetLeg was one of the stakeholders that have been consulted. I don't know if this also came up. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank maybe the presenters to bring this presentation to us first, but nevertheless to go on with the questions. Chairperson, I didn't see well where the bill also touched the issue of transporting school children. I think the bill is silent on that one, in that regard. And then also, in terms of the consultation, I'm not sure when was this consultation done, because my little experience is that when it was done, it mustn't be so long ago, because sometimes we're experiencing problems in terms of consultations. And then also, I didn't see well where you mentioned about consulting the people who are, I saw somewhere you're speaking about the public transport. I don't know whether you mean even people who are traveling with buses, where we've consulted bus companies. And then also, with the key issues in the bill and challenges, Chairperson, I'm a little bit concerned about the first one, whereby they talk about the contracting arrangement for public transport service that are revised. In which sense, Chairperson, when they are revised, may you please take us on board, because some of them, it depends about the period which was agreed upon maybe two people that. Are they not going to be affected, those people? Because it depends the period where of the duration when they make that particular contract. And then, last Chairperson, there is a thing which normally worries me. I saw somewhere you were talking about working close with municipalities and alike. Officials, good. The bill. It's silence about people who are making contracts or winning tenders, but not doing the job, taking the money and leaving, going away. What do we do? How to protect in such? I'll put it there, Chairperson.
Before the next speaker, let me just indicate that we'll just allow everybody to raise the issues, and then at the later stage we should be able to respond to them. Because if we can just do that stop gap, you responding, it may not necessarily take us to a longer distance. Honorable.
No, thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation about the amendment of the National Land Transport. I don't know when you start to deal with the amendment, what you checked in broad, because like the previous member said about the scholar transportation, because we have a vast common problem in our rural areas and the townships about the transportation of the school children by buggies and by coolies. I think they are not regulated. And I thought maybe in the amendment you would also include that. the other thing is about the subsidy. Subsidy for taxis. Most of the taxi bodies, when they come to Parliament to make presentations, they are also asking us question: why are they not subsidized like bus services, while they are the one who is carrying more than 60% of the commuters in our areas? In fact, on the on the rural areas and the township, they are about 90% carrier of the passengers. So they said, why they don't be subsidized, or I thought maybe you also include that in the amendment. And the other issue is about the scholar transport subsidy contracts. which is regulated by the Department of Transport but allocated by the Department of Education. I think there is a contradiction. Why don't you amend the act so that it must be controlled by one department? Because two departments, different goals of achievement, they are dealing with the contract for the transportation. While we have a Department of Transport, which must be the custodian of all the contracts related to the transport. Lastly, it's about the subsidy for rail. The subsidy to the Gauteng rail is three times the subsidy for the metro rail. Why don't you amend so that the metro rail is for poor passengers, while the house train is more of the people who are elite and who are comfortable financially? Why don't you increase the subsidy in terms of the metro rail to assist the poor people? I think that should have been included so that our legislation must be pro-poor. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Member. The last hand before we allow the... last two hands before we allow the session. Can't we...
You're having a second round.
Oh, okay. Let's take all the hands, then we'll get a second round.
Thank you, Chair. My essence in the responsibilities of the spheres of government. I heard you were mentioning that at a particular point this National Transport Act is still working within the premise of the Transitional Act. I'm trying to check in terms of when are you intending to align to have the relevancy of the Structures Act of the municipality so that it can be able to address these particular challenges. Because I think if it's not being addressed, we're still going to have a very serious challenge. The other thing that I'm trying to check with you, what does the municipalities are doing, maybe in terms of that at least they work hand in hand with plus away its relevant in a sense that they also engage and include its plan within the ITPs and engage with that particular entity in at least aligning the proper processes. You know, I'm saying this because at this present moment also President has just signed an agreement with the Chinese in building the Muloto rail. And I was just also wondering what has the municipal government have done in terms of ensuring that at least they link their IDP and prospects of their structures plan within a particular aspect. I'm really a bit worried about that. But lastly, Chair, you mentioned that in your section 35 that the requirement of the update of the PLTF every 2 years, you know, must be removed because it's going to get very expensive for government. So, but you are not also providing an alternative to say what's supposed to happen. Should it not be reviewed, should not be taken care of? What's going to happen? If that thing is being taken off, that it must be reviewed every 2 years, then what? Because each and every plan that is also is provided, I think also it has its expiry time or its elapsing time. But how do you ensure that at least there is also an assessment in terms of whether it's working properly or not? Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair, and then thank the presenter, the department's presentation. I want to ask the first question, just a general assistance from you with the amendment. Is the amendment been suggested based on the policy moving South Africa forward, the old act, the old white paper policy approach? I just want to try and find to locate this amendment within a policy outlook, which is the policy that informs us. Why I'm asking this question is because I heard there's some policy development people in the house. The state has inherited a huge problem, which is in 22 years down the line, we're still not able to get out of it. That's a monopoly in terms of public transport. Now, I'm listening and I've been listening, I haven't heard the provision that suggests that with this provision we are going to break the ground. We are going to actually transform the public transport. We're going to force the public transport to be inclusive. We're going to force going to break down the current monopolize. We're going to bring the minibus taxis by force in this public transport, in the feeder system transport. I haven't heard that. But I'm hearing the negotiated contract continue the stranglehold. Actually, you're going to continue the stranglehold that in 22 years down the line, even the envelope system has not worked. Has not been able to be realized. The 20 minibus taxis still find themselves outside of that provision, whereas the other transport, the big part in the Western Cape will be Golden Arrow. This is, and of course now my city. And continuously there's a crowding out of the minibus taxis. And we talked about people will be, if municipal want to change and change condition of transport, they would negotiate with them. My city in Cape Town has taken over routes that ordinarily belong or operated by minibus taxis. They're out. Now in this act, when we ask what is it that informs this act in order to make sure that there's a transformative public transport, I'm not hearing it. In fact, if I look at throughout negotiated contract, earlier when we discussed with the department and the acting director general, he promised us that in the amendment that is going to come, we're going to break the stranglehold of the what we call this monopoly act. So maybe I didn't get it correctly, which section is going to help us. Maybe you can help us to say, but I can tell you that if I look at on page 9, the responsibility, and I look at the power and negotiate this new contract, they're actually going to be a continuation, because the rights inherited by those who are operating now is what is going to give them the edge. Even they will take you to court, they've been threatening to take you to court. Now, which provision is going to help us to break this? If you can point that to me in terms of this, I'll be very glad to see it. But if it doesn't have, we are simply tinkering. And we are continuing with the unfair, skewed public transport provision, where 68% of the transport is provided by minibus taxis. And I mean, so and we can talk the figures. How many billions goes into the subsidy and what is the margin of the transfer, the provision? It's shrinking, it's going down. If you look at the committee patterns, it's going down on the buses, lesser people are being transported by more bus and more people are going into minibus taxis. The question of subsidy. So the whole thing about integrated public transport, the intention was to deal with this particular question. So I haven't heard the presenter telling me about it. Then the next question for me is, and I understand the provision of the Constitution, but if I'm listening to the presentation, there's more fragmentation approach than integrated constraint measures and direct is gone. When we do that, there's not even capacity that has been developed to address this, even at the level of the metros. Earlier on, when this act was mooted, it was focusing on the big cities because of the capacity and the budget. Now for the act to speak about a municipality that doesn't even have the revenue to run the municipal affairs and the rights in terms of this act to be able to provide this public transport, I don't know how it's going to be realized. But it is, of course, forward-looking. I don't want to be hard on that. It is forward-looking that one day in a blue moon, they will have a capacity and resource to be able to provide it. But once you fragment it, you can't be able to control it. He's not going to be able to run it from the center. I mean, the argument of Gauteng makes sense about the authority, because that integration and holding the handle about what happens in the big scheme of the city, of the province, is important, where you are able to say, this is what the NDP says around this thing, and where is the best located authority that can help us deal with these questions. And they will be able to say, as a province, this is where it's going. But here, you are opening up the wide field of conflict built into the legislation about the functional power and functions of municipality, even when they don't have the capacity to do so. So the third one, Chair, I just want to know, there is this moratorium of the, I don't know whether where that comes from, whether you're intending that in the main principal act, you are now going to define the moratorium, and then you're going to say, in the case of moratorium, when this thing happens, this is where it's going to be, or it's going to be applicable. Because currently the moratorium was not necessarily empowered in them. So there's been an understanding that we now have a congestion, and therefore we're going to apply this, which has been fraught with lots of challenges. The last question on this round, let me make that point now. On this round, the issue about the contravention and or this is called the breach or contravention or code of conduct, that the operating license would be considered based on the contravention of the act of legislation. It didn't say in terms of it didn't say what is going to be taken into account when that happens. Are you intending to say these are going to be the major contravention that's going to necessitate the review of the operating license? You give the right and you give it conditional upon contravention. So what are those contraventions that you're having? Some contraventions are dealt with in terms of the traffic act, in terms of fines and people dealing with the fine and demerit system and so on. So what are you talking here when you talk about this code of conduct? Code of conduct can be, if it association code of conduct, that you are referring to. And if you're talking about that, is that the one standard code of conduct that gives you schedules of contravention that gives the power that everybody knows that these are conservation that's going to maybe lose. So that's for me, Chair. Those are a few questions about, but I'm very worried about, I must say, in terms of the central theme of the amendment.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome the presentation. I'm largely covered on a number of aspects. Just to take on this issue of the, on page 25, operating licenses, regulatory entities must also consider conservation. I want to give the example of PADCO in Pretoria, Mamelodi. They just wake up and say, we are no longer operating between the township and the city center. Do you revoke and cancel that license and have punitive measures? Or if they so wish, tomorrow they will wake up and say, now we are operating. And if the state, through PRASA or TOPEX, didn't have buses, would be sitting in a situation where people would have been stranded up to today. I think there must be strong punitive measures for such wrong behavior. And there should be consequences for future when they want to apply for licenses. What they did surely is unpatriotic. I don't know in that regard. We just look at them and behave as if nothing has happened. Or you have done something that maybe you have to brief us, because that is going to recur moving forward. If you don't do anything now, others will wake up and do the same thing somewhere. And the state is blamed. Nobody is blamed. No PADCO buses were banned in that instance. The issue of e-hailing, Uber, is Uber operating legally in this country? Now they are there on the road, running up and down. Are they operating legally? Because we can't say we are waiting for the minister to regulate. Are they legal? I saw in some countries they lost cases. I've been following some of the cases internationally. They lost cases. Do we allow somebody just to wake up and have taxis without borders? Because they are doctors without borders. So there are meter taxis without borders. And you saw the violence in Gauteng. What are you saying as the department responsible for public transport? If they are not operating legally now, they must be stopped. And any other operator will just wake up and get into the route and operate. Because you can't allow people to be carried by illegal transport facilities. But if they are legal, what are we doing before we pass the act to make sure that now they don't have they have got more advantage than others who are highly regulated. So I wanted to check that. That's a clarity-seeking question, Chair. Thank you very much.
Honourable Fred.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few questions. The first is with regard to Section 21, your page 18, your presentation. You talk about the the National Public Transport Regulator, which until a recent gazette this year, which only deals with tourist operations, has a long list of functions. These amendments propose two additional functions. It concerns me that more functions are being added to something that's actually not really happening. So if that can be unpacked, how in reality this kind of thing is going to happen. Then my next question is on your page 24, which pertains to section 47. I'm concerned about possible financial consequences. We could talk about that. And my next question is on your page 13,
where you talk about responsibilities of different spheres of government, and I would have thought this would be a good opportunity to talk about provincial transport authorities. As my colleague mentioned earlier, there's more fragmentation, in my view, here than ever before, and this would be an ideal opportunity for provincial transport authorities to be implemented and tie all these loose ends together. So if you could just talk about that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Can we take another speaker?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you also for the presentation. I would like to focus my questions more on general impressions and comments of an overarching nature. Firstly, the whole issue around freight carriage, and I'm well aware that transport resorts under public enterprise, but surely in driving an agenda towards a prioritization to get freight off the road and on the rail, some mention, and in terms of economic development, I think it's a very important thing to at least show an intention of getting freight on rail rather than road. Then the second question, section 15 in the Principal Act talks about service level agreements, and then it specifies specifically in section 15 exclusively PRASA, where I would argue that we could use PRASA as an example, but we should open up the options as it's done in section 34, where no particular entity is specified, yet you talk about and describe it as organs of state that could be entered into and approached for agreements. I would argue that equal to section 34, section 15 could then also be sort of more generalized instead of having PRASA as the only entity that you would be allowed to go into service level agreements with. My third comment or question relates to the delegation of engagement that you allow, and I'm referring to sections 42, 43, 45, and then also 93B, where you allow delegation of engagement with and between municipalities and the department, but to a lesser extent describe the role of provincial departments then. And I think it should be of great importance then to describe how the provincial department in relation to oversight functions of municipalities, but then having access to services in particularly public transport would be opened up directly to Metro. So I think a lot more needs to be described in terms of roles and functions between the three entities, because I'm sure that this amendment is an attempt to indeed streamline and not complicate. The fourth question, Chair, in terms of several references of roles and functions, where it's, for instance, said that the MEC must monitor. I immediately struggle with statements like that, because what would be monitor? What would then give execution to monitoring, and what wouldn't be monitoring? And furthermore, if we say must, what is the penalty if we don't? So I think a lot more needs to be done around everything, and I've got hold of a couple of these descriptions where it said that the MEC or other particular roles and functions must execute a particular role. What happens if they don't? And then more specifically around things like instructing that they should monitor, what is the content then of monitor, which we should surely then also take up under the definition section? Thank you, Chair.
We have two last hands for this first round before clarification. There's definitely going to be a second round. Honourable Fava, and the last one is going to be Honourable Dr. Powder. Honourable Fava.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as you know, we represent in the NCOP provinces, and it is a Section 76 bill.
What we have to look at, and we see this a lot in provincial oversights which we just came from, is that scholar transport in some provinces fall under provinces, under the Department of Transport, and in others under the Department of Education. Now, the Department of Education's core function should be education, not transport. We cannot have that it's in one province under the one entity and then under transport in other provinces. It should be a cut-throat thing that everyone is under exactly the same department. And I believe that it should be under the Department of Transport where these scholar transport should fall under. So I don't see this in the bill, and I see this in the Land Transport Amendment Bill, so I would like to know where you will put this in. Then on the second one, on e-hailing like Uber, now, as I understand, you cannot regulate e-business with meters, as you can also not regulate minibus taxis with meters. It is an individual small business, private small business enterprise for individual entrepreneurs, as you know, the Uber system.